In our class on Sunday, we did not get finished with chapter 42. I want to pick up there some of the things that we did not get to. Jacob's sons now have arrived in Egypt to seek grain. One of the questions we ask on the lesson, question 6, why did Jacob send his sons to Egypt to gather food? That's not a wrong answer. That is a correct answer, but that's not what I'm looking for. That is a correct answer, but it's not the one I'm looking for. These guys that write these questions, you don't even know what they have in their mind. But anyway, look at verse 2.
So that we may live and not die.
That's what I'm looking for. So that we may live. Your answers were right, but I want that so that we may live and not die. This connects to what we've been observing all the way through, this promise of a great nation to Abraham in what chapter?
12.
And so this is Abraham and then Isaac and then Jacob, and now you've got his boys, so that you may live and not die. And he'll develop that boy when we get to chapter 45 and then in chapter 50. So Craig mentioned in his prayer the providence of God, and that's what we see here. This famine, as bad as it was a cause for these boys to go to Egypt and there be reunited with their brother, which in turn led to the entire family being moved to Egypt. And in Egypt is where they became a great nation. And so we see these events that at the time they're happening, people wonder what's going on. And yet God is working out His plan. Okay, so they come to Egypt, and there's a statement that recurs throughout chapter 42 that I find particularly interesting in view of the history. Note down in verse 11, "We are all sons of one man," they tell Joseph. "We are honest men." They don't know they're speaking to Joseph. Can you imagine telling Joseph, "We are honest men"? When for the past 22 years, their poor daddy has labored under a lie that they told their daddy about Joseph. We are honest men. Down in verse 16, a number of these events that you read about here that Joseph involved these men in was evidently to test this very thing. You'll note down in verse 16, "Send one of you that he may get your brother while you remain confined, that your words may be tested, whether there is truth in you." Isn't that saying the same thing in different words? Whether there's truth in you. And then down in verse 19, here's Joseph again. "If you are honest men." And then in verse 20, look at this statement. "So that your words may be verified and you will not die." You honest men? Prove it. Let's see if you are. Of course, Joseph knew what they didn't know. They didn't know they were talking to Joseph. Well, we ask you the question on the lesson. Number 8, what happened on their, I should have put way home, I see a typo there, on their way home from that first visit that filled them with dismay. Found the money in their sack that they had taken to buy the grain. Obviously, that fills them with concern. And so it says, in fact, verse 28, their hearts sank. And this is interesting. They turned trembling to one another, saying, "What have we done to ourselves?" Is that what they said? What has God done to us? And yet, the circumstances that they're in was originally instigated by who? By them selling their own brother. Oh, it's God's fault. God, what is God doing this to us for? Right. And oftentimes people ask those kind of questions when they're at a point in their lives because of choices they have made in the past. Why is God doing this to us? Little did they know, of course, that God was indeed using them to carry out His plans, even though it was a very difficult time for them. So in verse 31, when they got back to Jacob, note what they tell their daddy. We said to him, we're honest men. We're not spies. And then in verse 33, they caught it. Because they said, the Lord of the land said to us, by this I will know that you are honest men. Verse 34, bring your youngest brother to me that I may know that you are not spies, but honest men. And so you can see this thread running throughout this entire chapter about this business of were they honest men or not. And so it's interesting that they still have not fessed up about their part relative to Joseph. So let's go to chapter 43. Oh, a couple other questions on the last lesson. Who is Zaphnath-Paneah? Name given to Joseph by Pharaoh. Don't know exactly what that name means. There's various ideas. Who's Asenath? His wife. And what does Manasseh mean?
For God has made me forget all my toil and all my father's house.
All right. The idea of forgetting, making me forget. So things had gotten very good for Joseph there in Egypt. And then Ephraim, fruitfulness. So names meant something back during that time. And so those are those names. And then, of course, Ephraim became what the northern tribe was known by, Ephraim or Israel. Okay, let's go to chapter 43 through 45. So I don't know how much time is involved here. Verse 2, when they had finished eating the grain which they had brought from Egypt. When you get back... We see that the 7 years of plenty had went, and then the famine had begun. And then later, in verse 6 of chapter 45, he says the famine has been in the land 2 years. That makes Joseph at that time 39. But be that as it may, here we find in chapter 43... came about when they had finished eating the grain which they had brought from Egypt. I don't know how long that took, how many weeks or months or whatever was involved in that. So their father said, go back, buy us a little food. Judah spoke up. He said, the man solemnly warned us, you shall not see my face unless your brother is with you. And that's one of the questions we asked, question number one. In verse 20 of chapter 42, bring your youngest brother to me. And chapter 34, they rehearsed that requirement to their father. Bring your youngest brother to me. And so now they're telling their daddy again, for us to come back before this ruler, we have got to bring Benjamin. And he said, verse 5, you will not see my face unless your brother's with you. So Jacob is very distraught. He's already lost one boy. You don't know what's going to happen. And then, of course, Simeon was already bound. Remember, Joseph retained Simeon. So that's two boys. Now the young boy, they want him to go. And Jacob is very distraught about this. So he asked his boys, why did you tell him about the other? And they said he specifically asked us about, verse 7, our relatives. And so, verse 8, Judah said to his father Israel, send the lad with me, and we will arise and go, that we may live and not die, we as well as you and our little ones. There's again what you read in verse 2, so that we may live and not die. Verse 9, who's speaking?
Judah.
Judah. I myself will be surety for him. You may hold me responsible for him. In chapter 44, when they got there, they left, and the money was put in their sacks. Joseph's cup was put in Benjamin's sack. And then Joseph had his servants catch up with them, challenge them about this. Boy, they're really in trouble now. Look at chapter 44, verse 18. The Judah approached him and said, O my Lord, may your servants please speak a word in my Lord's ears, and do not be angry with your servant, for you're equal to Pharaoh. Look down at verse 33. Now, therefore, please let your servant remain instead of the lad, a slave to my Lord, and let the lad go up with his brothers. Go back to chapter, hold your finger here, go back to chapter 37. First, they were going to do what with Joseph? Kill him. But Reuben said, let's not kill him. And then, so they stripped him of his tunic, threw him in a pit. And we learned later that he was pleading, evidently, for mercy, but they ignored him. They sat down to eat. Verse 26, Judah said to his brothers, what profit is it for us to kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites. Sell him. Sell him as a slave. Now Judah says to daddy, look, I'll be the security. And sure enough, he told Joseph, take me. I'll be the slave. Let my brother go. Change of attitude in Judah, wasn't it? And much of these events, I have to wonder if Joseph was smart enough to do some of these things to see where his brothers were, to challenge their integrity. And certainly here's the very one who said, let's sell him, who's saying, I'll stay, I'll be a slave, I'll be the ransom this time for my brother. And so, that's what he tells his dad. And so they encourage their dad to let them go and bring Benjamin with them. And they brought all kind of gifts, as you can see in verse 11. And so verse 16, Joseph saw Benjamin with them. He said to his house steward, bring the men into the house and slay an animal and make ready, for the men are to dine with me at noon. So the man did as Joseph said and brought the men to Joseph's house. Now the men were afraid because they were brought to Joseph's house, and they said, it is because of the money that was returned in our sacks the first time that we're being brought in, that he may seek occasion against us and fall upon us and take us for slaves and our donkeys. So they came near to Joseph's house steward and spoke to him at the entrance of the house, and then went through their story. And so the steward, verse 23, said, be at ease, do not be afraid. Your God and the God of your fathers have given you treasure in your sacks. I had your money. And he brought Simeon out to them. So they're treated very well, verse 24. And they prepare for Joseph's meeting them at noon. So in verse 26, when Joseph came home, they brought into the house to him the present which was in their hand and bowed to the ground before him. What does that recall?
His dreams.
How long ago had that been?
A long time.
When he told the dream, we don't know if the dream happened in chronological order in which it's recorded. Remember that in 37? But when he was sold, he was how old?
17.
So the dream is at least when he was 17 or previous. Possibly previous. And so, based on the fact that we're in the years of plenty, how many years at least have passed now? Well, that's over in 45 where you get the nine. So you got 7 years of plenty, and then in chapter 45, verse 6, you add those two, you got nine. So how old is Joseph? Okay. So here's Joseph, 39. And so they come before Joseph, and he brings them into the house. And I don't know what the difference in the way Joseph looked when he was 17 and 39. But I guess if you hadn't seen somebody for 22 years, and the last time you saw them, they were a teenager. It's very easy for their appearance to have so changed that you do not recognize them. And of course, in their minds, they didn't know what had happened to Joseph. They just sold him as a slave. Had no idea that he would be the ruler of Egypt. And, sir? Possibly. Possibly had a beard. So they bowed down in homage. So at least 22 years later, right? Maybe more. These dreams began to be fulfilled. And so he asked them if this is their youngest brother, and they said yes. And so it's interesting in verse 30, Joseph hurried out, for he deeply stirred over his brother, and he sought a place to weep, and he entered his chamber and wept there. He washed his face and came out, and he controlled himself, and he said, serve the meal. They ate separately, because that was the custom with the Egyptians, not to eat with Hebrews. But it's interesting in verse 33, they were seated before him, the firstborn according to his birthright, the youngest according to his youth. And the men looked at one another in astonishment. Why is this Egyptian monarch seating us this way? And I don't know if they asked them about their ages or if Joseph just told them, seat them this way. But even if they ask them, why would they ask that? Why would they seat them this way? If they didn't ask them, that would really be puzzling. How do they know our respective ages? But there was a guy there who knew, and that was Joseph. So they ate and drank with him, verse 34. So chapter 44. He commanded his house steward, fill the men's sacks with food as much as they can carry, and put each man's money in the mouth of his sack. Put the cup, the silver cup, in the mouth of the sack of the youngest, and his money for the grain. And he did as Joseph had told him. Now that's an important verse. And here's why it's an important verse. In verse 5, when they weren't far off, and the house steward caught up with them, why have you repaid evil for good? In verse 4, he said, is not this one from which my Lord drinks and from which he indeed uses for divination? You have done wrong in doing this. He said, Joseph uses this cup for divination, for divining. Of course, they denied it. They didn't know about it. No. If that cup's in one of our sacks, well, let him die. And this may well have been Joseph's master plan to see what would happen when their youngest brother got in trouble. Would they still do like they did him? And so the silver cup was put in Benjamin's sack. And so verse 12, he searched beginning with the oldest and ending with the youngest. Can you imagine if a book was being written about this, how many pages that would occupy? They went from one to the other. Guy felt relief. And they go to the next guy, and the next guy, and the next guy. And they get to Benjamin. Oh, no. There's the cup. And it says, verse 13, they tore their clothes. And when each man loaded his donkey, they returned to the city. Here they came to Joseph's house, and look what they do again. They fell down, fell to the ground before him. Joseph said, "What is this deed you have done? Do you not know that such a man as I can indeed practice divination?" So sometimes people say, "Wait a minute, I thought Joseph was a man of God. Was he doing divining with a cup?" Did Joseph need a cup to divine where the cup was?
No.
No. There is nothing in this text about Joseph actually practicing divination according to the heathen custom. Yes, the heathen had a custom of using cups to divine things, to interpret supernatural events or what was going to happen. There's nothing in this text that requires or implies Joseph practiced that. Now, it is true, he said, "I can indeed practice divination." Don't you know that? But Joseph knew he did not need a cup to divine dreams. Did he?
No.
He knew that. 9 years previous, what he had done? What had he done?
Told
Pharaoh's dreams. Interpreted Pharaoh's dreams. Who did he give credit to? God. Not a cup. Not a heathen practice. After this event, which we're going to read here in a little bit, chapter 45, and then later in the class, last lesson, chapter 50, who is he attributing all these events to?
God.
And chapter 50 is the God of Abraham. Before this event, after this event, there shows that he has faith in the God of Abraham, the God that he had served all his life. And in chapter 42, verse 18. "See, I could put you to death." Why didn't he? "I fear God. I fear God." Is there an Egyptian God that would have kept him from putting his brothers to death? No. But the God that he served caused him to have fear, not to practice revenge. And so, however you want to try to figure out this deal about divination, personally, I do not believe it implies at all that Joseph actually practiced it. It was part of his plan, maybe to see. Probably, you'll look down in verse 16. "How can we justify ourselves? God has found out the iniquity of your servant." To heighten their guilt. They not only had the money returned this time, they took the sacred cup. "We are really, really guilty." Will they admit it? Will they come face to face with it? And so he said, "We are my Lord's slaves." Isn't that interesting? Sold him as a slave. Now they're saying, "We are my Lord's slaves." And so Joseph said, "No, the boy that took the cup, he'll be my slave. You're going back to your dad." And then here's where Judah interceded. "Oh, my Lord, may your servant please speak a word in your Lord's ears." Then he goes through the story. And Joseph asks him, "Have you a father or brother?" And so Joseph tells him the story. "We have an old father and a little child of his old age." Look at verse 20. What did he say about Joseph?
He's dead.
Honest?
They thought he was dead.
What makes you think they thought he was dead? On what grounds? What ground did they think he was dead?
They assumed he was dead.
Huh?
They assumed he was dead.
How do you know that?
Because he said he was.
Oh, so we can trust what these boys say? Huh?
I'd be a lie propagation. The story that he's telling.
Or are they going to say, we sold him into slavery. I don't know what happened to him. I don't know if they thought he was dead or not. Why don't they fess up? These honest men. Our brother's dead. They don't know if he's dead or not. Now, I don't even know if they thought he was dead. Maybe they did. I don't know. You don't know. I don't know. I don't think you know either. I don't know. Because they said it. If you've got more that much trust in them, you've got more trust than I do. Maybe so. But anyway. So Joseph wants them to bring the father down. And so it's interesting in verse 27, my father said to us, you know that my wife bore me two sons. What? Two? I thought he had 12.
Wife he loved.
This is kind of a side point, but let's see if we get it. Did he specify how many boys he had here by this wife? That's not a hard question. Yes. Do specifics exclude?
No.
Yes, that wife had two sons. Do you have any other sons by any other women? Doesn't say. I can't assume that he did. But I have now some text that he did back in Genesis 29 and 30. That's just another point for when we're talking about authority. Got authority in, didn't I, Keith? And so, verse 28, the one went out from me and I said, surely he's torn in pieces. And I have not seen him since. If you take this one also, now that's what Jacob was told. Have they ever corrected that with their daddy?
No.
Wait, I thought these were honest men. You trust what they say. Their poor old daddy's been laboring under this deception all these years. 22 years. Now therefore, when I come to your servant, my father, and by the way, this maybe for the first time, I don't know. Joseph now knows why he never heard from his dad. You know, he's sold into slavery. Why don't dad come get me? When he's in prison, why don't I hear from my dad? Doesn't he love me? All those years go by. Now he knows. I don't know if he knew before this. Now I know. They lied to my daddy. Yes.
Well, when they were first telling him about how they were honest men, they also said we're not spies. So maybe they're thinking that we're okay because they
That is the context of honest. We're honest men. But they just kept saying, we're honest, we're honest, we're honest. Well, I have a little difficulty with that personally. It's true, they're not spies. You're right, Ennis. That is the context in which they said it. Anyway, good observation. So, verse 33. Now, therefore, please let your servant, that's Judah, remain instead of the lad, a slave to my Lord. And let the lad go up with his brothers. For how shall I go to my father if the lad is not with me? For fear that I see the evil that would overtake my father. So what would happen to my dad if, you know, he's afraid, you know, he just, I guess, die of heartache, sorrow. And so this next section is, to me, one of the most touching parts of the Scriptures. First part of chapter 45. Here's this great ruler in Egypt. Got all this power in his hand. He can put these boys to death. He can imprison them. All these years have passed. His life has been impacted by their selfishness and jealousy and lying and cheating. But then it says Joseph could not control himself before all those who stood by him. And he cried, have everyone go out from me. So there was no man with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. He wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard it, and the household of Pharaoh heard it. And Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still alive?" What a moment that must have been. But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, please come closer to me. They came closer, and he said, "I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt." I guess they had trouble even believing it at first. But he mentioned, "You sold me." Oh, yes. How would the Egyptian monarch know that? "Do not be grieved or angry with yourselves." Would you say that? Or would we say, "I got you, buddy. You're getting what you deserve." I don't know. I think Joseph probably a better man than me. I don't know what I'd do. He said, "Do not be angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For," what's the motivating factor behind Joseph's thinking all the way through his life? "God sent me." Told that woman, "I can't do this and sin against God." God will interpret your dream. Told those two men in prison, "God will interpret your dream, Pharaoh." It's always God that directs the life of this man. And so, "God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant in the earth." A remnant. I thought the promise was to make a great nation of Abraham's seed. Are they a great nation? Not yet. They're a remnant. But God's preserving them because His plan has not reached its fulfillment yet. "To keep you alive by great deliverance. Now therefore, it was not you who sent me here." Did they?
Yes.
Yes. What's this an example of? Not but construction, isn't it? More importantly than your place in all of this is God's hand in it. "But," he said, "God. He's made me a father to Pharaoh," not biological father. That term was used by the Hebrews as a provider and protector. Job used it the same way. "A father to Pharaoh and lord of all his household and ruler over all the land of Egypt." So he told him to go get your father. "If you're going to live," verse 10, "in Goshen, you'll be near me. I'll take care of you, provide for you." Verse 11, "There's still 5 years of famine to come," so we have some time stamps here. Verse 13, "You must hurry and bring my father down here." So how was Jacob when he was sold? About 25? Remember that calculator lesson? 108. 22 years has passed. What do you think Joseph's thinking? "Dad's getting pretty old. Hurry. Go get my daddy." And so, verse 14, "He fell on his brother Benjamin's neck and wept. Benjamin wept on his neck. He kissed all his brothers and wept on them. And afterward, his brothers talked with him." So, Pharaoh and his servants were pleased with the reunion. Sent them back with abundant supplies. Verse 18, "Take your father and your household and come to me, and I'll give you the best of the land of Egypt. You'll eat the fat of the land. Now you're ordered to do this. Take wagons from the land of Egypt for your little ones and your wives and bring your father and come. Do not concern yourself with your goods, for the best of all the land of Egypt is yours." Wouldn't you like to move like that? Don't worry about taking anything. Everything will be supplied. And then the sons of Israel did so, and Joseph gave them wagons according to the command of Pharaoh and gave them provisions for their journey. And then Benjamin gets special treatment, as you see here. To each of them he gave changes of garments, but to Benjamin he gave 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of garments. And then he said, all these goods on these animals. So verse 24, he sent his brothers away, and as they departed, he said to them, isn't this interesting? "Hey, you guys, don't be fussing. Don't be quarreling. What might the quarrel be?
Whose fault Joseph was there.
Right. What did Reuben do back when that happened? He wanted to save him, didn't he?
Yeah.
Right?
So Judah wanted to be sure they didn't kill him because he was their own flesh. So he did good too.
Well, he did say, let's sell him. But yeah. Reuben's the one that saved him. They wanted to kill him. And then Jesus said, well, he's our flesh. Let's just sell him. But, you know, whose fault is this? And he said, don't be quarreling. Don't be quarreling about this.
Yeah, reputation
for
quarreling.
Sir?
Yeah, reputation for quarreling.
Yeah. Well, you can imagine this kind of event back when they were examining themselves about this thing and thinking about what happened. You can see what might have happened on the way home. But anyway, so they get back to Canaan, verse 25. So here's their dear old dad, 130 years old. They say, Joseph is still alive. He's indeed ruler of all the land of Egypt. And he just jumped for joy. He was so happy. Right? He said, that ain't so. He didn't believe them. He is an unbeliever. Right? Now, at the end of the chapter, he's a believer. What changed him from an unbeliever to a believer?
Sight.
Did the Holy Spirit zap his heart?
Sight.
Sight of what? Did he see Joseph?
He saw Joseph.
He saw Joseph? The wagons is part of it. There's something else mentioned.
They told him what Joseph had said.
That's right. What do you call that?
Testimony.
His faith was based on testimony, and in this case also some objective evidence, the wagons. John said that after Thomas saw Jesus, was allowed to see the place in his hands and the place where the spear was driven. Blessed are you because you've seen and believed. But blessed is who else?
Those
who have not seen yet believe. How are they going to believe?
Faith.
These are written testimony that you may believe. The testimony of witnesses. And they had objective evidence that they saw and talked about. It's not because he saw Joseph, not because he shook hands with him. Not because he hugged him, based on testimony. That's how people go from unbelief to belief, with evidence. You want to convince people to believe the gospel. Present the evidence. Present the evidence. That means I need to get equipped to be able to present that evidence. That's how people move from unbelief to belief. Okay, I believe we've answered all the questions, haven't we? Anybody have any comments before we end this class? Might have discussed what?
They might have discussed the things that had happened prior.
Well, back when, you mean when they sold it? Yeah, very possibly. Yeah, they may have discussed that. I don't know what they talked about. Why didn't Moses tell us? That would have been an interesting thing to record. That's a good point, Betty. You know, what did they talk about? Was it a painful discussion? If they talked about the past? Did they say, Joseph, we're so sorry? We're ashamed of what we did. I don't know what they said. But that would be an interesting discussion to have some more data on.
We have to trust the Holy Spirit. He would give us all that we need to know.
That's right. He gave us what we need to know. And we didn't need to know that. So just something we'll have to wonder about. Okay, our time is up. So Lord willing, in our next class, we've got two more classes. We'll study 46 and 47. Then we'll finish 48 through 50. in our last class. Thank you for your good comments this evening.